and body are permanent. When you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing has unchanging self. All right, so that's the paragraph that I'd like to talk about. Let's start with the first line. When you first seek Dharma, you imagine you are far away from its environment. So basically, what we're saying here is that when we first start practicing, we think that our current situation is not good enough for us to practice. We think that we have to do something special or go somewhere special in order to be able to understand our situation. You know, one of the images that I came up for this was, you know, when you have your glasses on top of your head and you're looking for your glasses. So you know that you're missing something. You know that something is not quite right, e.g. you can't see. And you're looking for your glasses so that you can see, but you're looking all the wrong places because your glasses are on top of your head. So the whole point of this is that your glasses being on top of your head is like you are already Buddha nature. You are already your original self. And yet there you are looking around trying to find your original self somewhere else other than, in this case, on top of your head. So that's kind of how it is. And then from a Buddhist perspective, we're looking for some kind of special state that we're driving for, that we're driving towards or striving for, which is not already part of us. And this isn't true. And that's why Dogen said it isn't anywhere near our current situation. That we're looking for it somewhere else other than where it should be, where we think it should be. And then the other thing is that, in particular, what Dogen mentions at the end of the fascicles, he mentions that one of our problems is that we think that we're permanent and that we don't realize that we are in these interconnected relationships. And that's one of the problems that keeps us from being able to find what we're looking for. All right, the next line is, at the moment when Dharma is authentically transmitted, you are your original self. So this Dharma that's authentically translated is the teaching. So the moment that we're actually able to bring these teachings into our heart and mind, and it might be that the way we start out bringing these teachings is through a kind of intellectual practice. It might be the way we find these teachings is through a heart practice. But this way that we encounter the teachings, the authentic teachings, in a way that speaks to us in such a way that we can actually open up and have a realization about that. And then this original self comes forward, because the original self is nothing more or less than your glasses on top of your head. This original self is who you are all the time. The question is whether or not we actually can manifest, from a Buddhist perspective, whether we can manifest that. And Dogen talks about this manifestation in Genja Koan. He describes it as forgetting to know the self. This self is to understand our true nature, is to forget the self, the small self. So that's one way that he talks about it. He talks about it, he says, to carry the self forward is delusion, to carry the small self forward is delusion, and to allow myriad things to come forth to meet you, this is when the original self comes forward, because the original self is not separate from myriad things. So at the moment when the Dharma is authentically transmitted, you are originally your original self. So you are immediately your original self. So I'm looking at my notes here, wondering about whether or not I want to say this part. So hang here with me for a second. So this person, this original self, is not separate, and yet simultaneously this does not negate your personality. It does not negate. You do not become nothing. You do not have your individual particularity. And yet simultaneously, we are in this complete interconnected relationship with what Dogen calls in Zenki the whole works. So this way that everything is functioning as part of this totality. And so that means that not having gone anywhere with yourself as it is, and the original self being able to come forward, incorporated with, as part of, not separate from, who you are, you are able to turn towards, open up, realize, have a kind of faith in this teaching. You may see and manifest this shared experience with all dharmas. So in this way, you're acting as your original self. And the original self is just who you are right now in a basic real level in your life as it is right now. So you don't have to go anywhere to find this. You don't have to go to some other place. Sometimes we go places that are helpful to us, like we go to a monastic environment, we go to a Zen center, we do lots of things that help us enact this understanding. We do it through ceremony and Soto Zen, we do it through forms, we do it through going to the Zendo, we do it in Sangha, we do it with our teachers, and we do it by understanding the Dharma. But all this is happening right now. We are all part of this world. We're part of the solar system, this universe, this city, your backyard, the Dharma Hall together here on Zoom, our electronic Dharma Hall. We are together with the birds, the rocks, tables, friends, enemies, etc., as this one great causal connection called what Dogen is calling the whole works. And one of the ways that I think about this is when we are, I have often used the example of driving, but I have to say that the whole question of social distancing and wearing masks, what other people are doing, what I'm doing, I find this to be a fascinating laboratory for an insight into how I am practicing, how we are practicing, a big opportunity to practice and to see in a real visceral way, to see how we are all functioning together. And when we aren't doing this, how that affects us. So, you know, going to the supermarket is this way in which we really right now can see this mandala of interacting together. Am I 6 feet away from this other person? Are they wearing a mask? What do I think about that? Am I wearing my mask? What, you know, I see a clerk down the aisle stocking and I, you know, putting cans on the shelf, and I think, you know, don't get too close to him because I might make him nervous. Or maybe I want to ask him a question. So how do I not get too close and yet be able to have this conversation with him? So this is this way in which really we are being asked to pay attention to this mandala of this interconnection, this dance, if you will, that we're doing with each other that normally we don't think too much about. So the example that Dogen gives of this, he says, when you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. But when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. So, okay, when you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. So if you are on a boat in this example he's giving, you might think that the boat is stationary and the shore is moving. And you know mentally and cognitively, you know that that's incorrect. And I've had this experience. You know, once Jaco and I went on a repositioning cruise on the Princess Line. And so, you know, these are these giant cruise ships. They're like, I don't know, stories tall. And you're standing there, and it's pulling away from the dock. But for the life of you, this is the experience I had. My perception was that the dock was moving, not the ship. So there's an example of actually my whole body and my whole body is telling me that this thing is happening, that the dock somehow is moving away from the boat. This also happened when we were in Scotland, and we were on a ferry going out to Iona. The island of Iona had the same experience. So, but I knew that that the ferry was pulling away from the dock. It wasn't that the dock was moving away from the ferry. So here's an example. I wonder if Dogen, when he went to China, had this experience as well, you know. So he said, to himself, good for a Dharma talk. I'm going to add this here. I remember having that experience. So when you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. So here's an example when Dogen's saying, your assumptions are wrong. But then he says, if you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. So if you keep your eye closely on your experience, you can see that actually it is not the shore that is moving. So your body and mind are giving you a certain set of cues about your experience, and yet from a Buddhist perspective, well, in the case of the boat example, from our own perspective, we know that it's not true. But in the example that he's trying to give here, we realize that that your body and mind are telling you that you are separate, that your original self is somewhere else, that you can't find it. You know, where are my glasses? You can't find it. And you're looking. But from the Buddhist perspective, we know that the original self is not over there. The original self is right here, not somewhere over there. Even though it feels as if it is very distant from our current circumstances. So, for example, when we're upset about something, we feel like we've done something really stupid. We feel like our equanimity is somewhere way over there, that maybe we'll never see it again. But we know that that's not true, actually. A little patience, a little time, a different circumstance, something will shift. And then we are no longer feeling that way. The next line is, similarly, if you examine myriad things with a confused body and mind, okay, so that's that body and mind that Dogen's talking about, if you examine myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and body are permanent. You might think your mind and body are permanent. And then the next thing he says is, when you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing has unchanging self. So these are two very important teachings in Buddhism, that we do not have a permanent self and that everything is impermanent, which is essentially the same teaching. It's talking about it from two sides. So we are convinced by our senses that we are separate and not part of the whole. And we are convinced that we have an unchanging mind. And we think that other things change, the shore, but not ourselves, the boat. So I was thinking about this morning about how is it that I think that I am permanent? How is it that I have that mistaken view? And I thought, I have this voice in my head. I'm assuming most people do, because we know language, we've learned language, so we talk to ourselves. And that voice feels very real. It feels very separate. It feels like I am somehow this little homunculus in my head that is having a conversation with perhaps some other part of myself. And that we're dialoguing, and that this part of me is separate, and this part of me is who I am. This is a real part of me. And that this voice, if you will, is separate from my physical body. At the moment that I'm listening to that voice, I'm thinking that it's very permanent, and that it is not changing in some real basic way. But actually, the voice in my head is nothing more or less than the chemical processes in my brain. And we know when people have dementia is caused by impermanence. Dementia is caused by causes and conditions. Dementia is caused by things changing. Where does that personality go? Where is that permanent self that we thought was never going to change. And so there's an example of where we, and interestingly enough, as I think about this, perhaps in the process of succumbing, if you will, I don't think succumbing is the right word, perhaps in the process of this impermanence of losing one's mind, there's this way in which it is still the permanent self. We still perceive ourselves as permanent, even though we cannot see something very different has happened. So I think that we are built to have the sense that we are permanent. Just like our perceptions when the boat is moving and we perceive it as a shore is moving, our perceptions say to us, wow, this is really happening. And yet there is this way in which intellectually we say, wait a minute, I actually know from all the information that I have that this is not how it works. I know that I do not have a permanent self. And if I look at that, I can see that I function within the totality of this mandala of causes and conditions called reality and called our life. So when we are able to do that, and we're able to see that impermanence is happening, I think we also, at that point, begin to realize that what is it that is affecting, changing, bringing about that impermanence? And it is our interconnection. It is the interpenetration of the world, of everything simultaneously functioning. We're not separate from that. So we can think about that as, you know, in relationship to the coronavirus, it's obviously clear that there's something that we normally think of being outside ourselves that is now being inside ourselves, that is a cause and condition that's changing us. But from a Buddhist perspective, it's not different from us. From a Buddhist perspective, it is the totality of all of this functioning together and how we respond to that. Now, from a Buddhist perspective, from a bodhisattva practice perspective, the idea is that we are doing this practice to learn how to respond to the world and to each other and to ourselves in a way that is skillful, and that we are creating a compassion and a kind of sanity and empathy towards ourselves and others that will bring about skillful means that will be helpful, beneficial, you know, our vow to benefit all beings. So that, for us as people practicing the bodhisattva practice as bodhisattvas, that is what we are striving to do by talking about the nature of our experience, I think, as impermanent. So we have to look at what's moving, the boat or the shore, really investigate the nature of our experience, and then we have to go beyond that and turn it into action from a bodhisattva perspective. So that's one of the things, again, that I find fascinating about what's going on with social distancing is that I'm being asked to engage in this bodhisattva practice in a way that is fascinatingly real, that sometimes pushes my buttons, but ultimately my vow as a practitioner is to do this practice, and do this practice not for myself, but to do the practice for other people. So, because we are not separate from each other. So again, to go back to the example of the grocery store, when I go to the grocery store and people are wearing masks right now, in California anyway, in our neck of the woods, I can see Eric, so I know he's in Austin. You know, in our neck of the woods, we all have been told now we can't go in a store if we don't wear a mask. So we're greeted at the door with that. And I know that when I wear a mask, as they've told us, you know, it's not so much about, if you're not wearing an N95 mask, it's not so much about that you are protecting yourself. It's that what you're doing is protecting other people. Now, of course, if we all buy into this and we're all protecting other people by wearing a mask, then we ourselves are protected as well. So here's an example of when we're all doing this mandala together, it has an efficacious outcome for absolutely everybody. So that's a way to think about this. But for me, I find it interesting just from a practitioner's point of view that here is an example of a clear, to me, a very clear, unequivocal example of doing things that may be uncomfortable for me. Doing something that is inconvenient. Doing something that is outside my normal patterns of behavior. And doing something that I don't, you know, necessarily maybe agree with everything that's going on. But the issue for me, from a practice point of view, is myriad, you know, to carry the self forward is delusion. To allow myriad things to come forth is realization. To allow the myriad things of this situation to come forth and to meet them and to say, how can I benefit the situation, is practice. Practice realization. So that's how I see Dogen's teachings in this situation to apply to a very real life event that we are experiencing, this pandemic. The whole world is being asked to do this practice. It's a really lovely thing. We're all in this together. We're all doing this dance together. And it's so clear. Usually we don't get that. We don't get to see how clearly we are in this together. So I think in a way this is the gift of this pandemic. It's a gift that we can give each other. And it's a practice gift. And so I hope that we can all look at this as a practice and take some joy in the notion that the things that we do are supporting ourselves, but also supporting the equanimity and the peace of mind of all of those people around us. Thank you very much.